Imagine a world where love is considered a disease, where emotional connection is surgically removed at age 18. This is the haunting reality of Requiem, where society is split between Portland, a walled city of emotional control, and the untamed wilds where rebels fight for the right to feel. The contrast couldn't be more stark. Inside Portland's walls, citizens live in climate-controlled homes with reliable food and modern conveniences, but exist in a state of emotional numbness. Parents show no particular affection for their children, spouses interact with mechanical politeness, and friendships remain superficial. Meanwhile, in the wilds, rebels struggle daily for survival, scavenging abandoned buildings, sleeping in makeshift camps, enduring bitter cold with limited supplies. Yet they experience the full spectrum of human emotion that gives life its vibrancy. The physical wall separating these worlds isn't just keeping rebels out, it's keeping Portland citizens in, both physically and mentally. As one character observes, the wall represents not just containment, but constraint, a barrier between two ways of being human. This division forces us to consider, is safety worth sacrificing what makes us human? Is a controlled, predictable life preferable to one filled with both joy and pain? Lena Holloway's escape to the resistance reveals that emotional freedom isn't the paradise she imagined. Freedom brings responsibility, pain, and difficult choices, especially in her relationships with Alex and Julian. When Alex returns after she thought him dead, he's transformed by imprisonment, coldly claiming he never loved her. Julian offers a different kind of love, one born in crisis as the son of an anti-love crusader. Their relationship formed under extreme circumstances, creating a genuine bond complicated by his inexperience with emotional freedom. This love triangle embodies the novel's central themes. When the men fight over her, Lena feels angry at being treated like a possession. Later, Alex leaves a note referencing the story of Solomon, suggesting he's removing himself out of love, demonstrating that true love sometimes means sacrifice rather than possession. Through these relationships, Lena discovers emotional freedom guarantees not comfort, but authenticity, with all its complications. Through Lena's former best friend, Hannah, we witness the unsettling reality that the cure doesn't work perfectly. Now engaged to Portland's new mayor, Fred Hargrove, Hannah observes her beauty with complete detachment. "I am beautiful, but I no longer care." This indifference extends to her impending marriage, which she approaches with clinical distance. Yet cracks appear in her facade. Hannah experiences nightmares about Lena, finds herself drawn to places from her past, and secretly helps Lena's family hiding in the Highlands, suggesting the cure has merely buried her emotions, not eliminated them. The most chilling revelation comes when Hannah confesses to betraying Lena and Alex to authorities out of jealousy, delivered emotionlessly. "Before the procedure, I felt bad about it. Now it's different." This crystallizes the horror of Portland's cure. It eliminates not just love, but moral conscience, creating not better people, just diminished ones. Portland's detention center, the Crips, embodies the novel's most terrifying control mechanism. Through flashbacks, we see how this facility systematically breaks individuals. Alex describes being kept in darkness, deprived of necessities, and psychologically tormented to destroy his capacity for love. "They hurt you," he tells Lena, "and then they hurt you again, and they expect you to be grateful when they give you a moment to catch your breath." Hannah's discovery of Cassandra, her fiancé's previous wife, reveals another disturbing aspect. Imprisoned for acute delusions, Cassandra was committed after uncovering Fred's sociopathic tendencies and involvement in political assassination, demonstrating how institutions are weaponized against those who threaten power. The Crypt's public acceptance as necessary for maintaining order reveals Portland's fundamental contradiction. While claiming to eliminate dangerous emotions through the cure, the city maintains a massive facility for punishing emotional criminals. This suggests leaders know their system relies not just on the cure, but on fear and force. While Portland tries to destroy emotional bonds, family connections create the novel's most poignant moments. The reunion between Lena and her mother, whom Lena believed had committed suicide rather than accept the cure, forces an emotional reckoning. Their initially tense meeting resolves when her mother explains she stayed away to protect Lena, surviving the crypts by focusing on thoughts of her daughters. "I stayed alive for you," she reveals, showing how familial love provided strength to endure suffering. Equally moving is Lena's determination to rescue her cousin Grace from the burning Highlands. Finding Grace hiding in a cellar beneath the flames, Lena patiently gains the traumatized girl's trust despite the immediate danger. Lena carrying Grace through the burning house symbolizes familial responsibility. Unlike Portland's government, which abandons those it deems defective, Lena risks her life to save a vulnerable family member, demonstrating how genuine love motivates protection rather than abandonment. The resistance movement in Requiem fights not for political power, but for the right to experience the full spectrum of human emotion. Unlike traditional rebellions, this resistance defends humanity's core capacity to love, grieve, rejoice, and suffer. What makes this movement compelling is its diversity. It unites those who escaped being cured, the imperfectly cured, Portland sympathizers, and uncured children. Former officials work alongside artists preserving creativity. Parents who lost children to the cure fight beside teenagers who fled their procedures, showing how the desire for emotional freedom transcends social boundaries. The resistance evolves from merely surviving in the wild to actively infiltrating Portland through networks and safe houses. Their assault on the wall represents both military strategy and psychological warfare, revealing the artificial nature of the safe versus wild divide. Lena's realization that the uprising includes invalids, uncured children, and even some cured citizens suggests that the human need for authentic experience cannot be permanently suppressed, even through chemical means. The novel concludes with citizens, both invalids and Portlanders, tearing down the walls separating their worlds, symbolizing emotional freedom. As Lena watches, she acknowledges they can't know what lies beyond, the very uncertainty Portland's system sought to eliminate. This destruction isn't portrayed as a happy ending, but as the beginning of a complex journey. Lena recognizes that freedom brings uncertainty and potential danger, yet argues this is preferable to the suffocating safety of control. "Take down the walls," she urges in the novel's final lines. "That's how you find your way out." The conclusion intentionally leaves questions unanswered. We don't learn if Portland's government falls or which man Lena chooses. These unresolved elements reflect the novel's central insight. Freedom doesn't guarantee happiness or safety, only the possibility of authentic choice. What makes us truly human isn't the absence of pain, but our capacity to feel deeply. By dismantling the walls separating us from our full emotional range, we discover something more valuable than perfect happiness: the opportunity to live authentically.